Hello, this is Carol Bond. Welcome to today's reading of the Decatur Herald and Review. We're reading the issue dated June 2nd, 2015. We'll begin with some articles of local interest. The first concerns the administrative court. Here's the headline. Council makes suggestions for administrative court changes, and it was written by Allison Petty. Decatur City Council members brought forward a spectrum of suggestions for the city's administrative court and code enforcement policies Monday, but it appeared none would lead to a formal vote. Council members spoke for more than an hour about the court, which was also the subject of a three-hour study session May 18th. City Manager Tim Gleason said he would review their comments, meet with staff, and return with an update on any potential policy changes. It would take a majority of the council to amend city code, something Gleason has not recommended. Some aspects of the court that have been widely discussed, including the issuance of a courtesy notification letter, are not outlined in city code and could be changed by city staff. Gleason has already said he will institute a voluntary landlord registration system and also plans to make neighborhood inspectors' database publicly accessible online. Both measures, which he hopes to roll out this month, are aimed at improving communication between the city and landlords. I truly have enjoyed this, Gleason said, referring to the comprehensive discussion of the court. I enjoy this exchange because I want to serve this community. I want to capture the vision of the elected officials. I am charged with that, and I take that very seriously. The council expanded the administrative court in 2012 to help clean up neighborhoods and provide alternative consequences to what might otherwise be considered relatively minor misdemeanors. All of the council members generally expressed support for the court, though some wanted changes. Most public comments have related to the handling of property and nuisance violations. Landlords, in particular, have complained for months that they are not given enough notice or time to fix violations before receiving a citation, which typically carries a $150 fine. In most cases, neighborhood inspectors send courtesy letters that give property owners 4 days from the date the letter is mailed to fix the problem. City code does not require this notification. Letters are not sent for weeds cases, in which grass taller than 10 inches leads to an automatic citation. Violators also have just 72 hours to clean up extreme cases of trash and debris, which could endanger public health and safety. Both the landlord registration system, which could allow for email contact, and the online database are designed to give landlords earlier opportunities to learn of a violation. Several council members also said they would like the city to extend the amount of time for the courtesy notifications, though their suggestions varied from 10 days to 4 business days. Councilman Pat Daniel pointed out that the court affects all property owners, and residents who are not landlords would not be helped by the landlord registration system. 4 days is ridiculous, especially when 2 of those days are Saturday and Sunday, said McDaniel, who first asked for a study session to review the court in January. That doesn't make sense. We have to be fair. We want to clean up our city. Let's try to be as fair as possible. McDaniel also said he felt strongly that the city's neighborhood inspectors should not report to the legal department, as they have since last June. He called the arrangement a conflict of interest. Councilman Bill Faber asked for a task force to review the court, suggesting that it should include local attorneys, landlords, and neighborhood representatives. The manager makes the point that the administrative court affects only a small number of people, he said. Perhaps so, but that does not relieve city government of maintaining a fair and functional administrative court. Faber also recommended several changes, including changing the format to operate similar to small claims cases in Macon County Circuit Court. He wanted to give 10 business days for notice of violations and to waive fines for first-time offenders if the violation is abated. Councilman Jerry Dawson also said the city should look at first-time offenders differently, especially if they could provide proof that there were extenuating circumstances in their situations. For instance, Dawson said several residents had contacted him over the past few years with legitimate reasons they could not deal with a problem immediately, including a hospitalization. When he brought the issues to city staff, Dawson said they pretty much fell on deaf ears. I think we need to be a lot smarter about how we're doing that. If it's a first offender and they can legitimately show you that they weren't available to get this notice, what is the big deal? It's the first offense, Dawson said, adding that he also thought hearing officers should grant continuances in administrative court to those who wanted them. Councilwoman Dana Ray said she hoped that the additional measures Gleason plans to add will improve communication between landlords and the city. She is in favor of the landlord registration, but also said she would support making it mandatory. Ray asked that the city extend its notice to longer than 4 days and echoed Dawson's comments about special circumstances. If someone can prove that there are extenuating circumstances why they cannot get something complied with, we need to give them the opportunity to prove that and provide them some leniency, she said. Several council members, including Dawson and Councilwoman Julie Moore Wolf, said they favored the creation of a community service option for people who cannot afford to pay their fines. Moore Wolf said she was excited about the new methods of notification for landlords and agreed that there should be some consideration of special circumstances in the case of first-time offenders. She said she wrestled with the issue of notification times, as the people living next door to violations must also be considered. We saw last summer a terrible house where children couldn't play in the streets, and that's not fair. People should know better, she said. Councilwoman Lisa Gregory said that if a task force is formed, she would recommend that it consider a narrow scope of issues and have measurable goals. Gregory said she wanted to consider the effect of any potential changes on the city's budget. I've never been a big fan of change just for the sake of change. If the change should come, it should be a continuous improvement process, and it should be measurable, she said. Speaking after all the council members, Mayor Mike McElroy reiterated his conviction that the city looks better today than it did 12 years ago when he took office. But, McElroy said, he is still frustrated by the appearance of some areas of Decatur. The mayor said he respects and sympathizes with landlords who invest in their properties and who must sometimes deal with problems caused by their tenants. But while the city must treat its residents fairly, McElroy said, landlords also have a responsibility as business owners to maintain property that they own. If they break windows or whatever, that's your money. I know that, he said. But I live here, and it's my community, and I have a right to expect people to know that when your grass gets up to my knee, you probably ought to mow it. Wendy Morthland, the city's corporation counsel, addressed the comments of several council members who said the city should attempt to prosecute tenants whenever possible. She said there are some instances when the city must pursue the landlord, as there is the potential that a lien could be placed on the property. These include weeds cases, 72-hour notification cases of public health and safety, and housing cases. In other situations, she said the city doesn't always know who the tenant is. If the landlord contacts the city with proof, the tenant can be added to the case. As long as they provide something that shows that there's somebody else with a legal interest in that property, we add them to the complaint and pursue it against the tenant, she said. The goal is always to correct the behavior. Speaking after the meeting, Gleason said he plans to review the wide-ranging comments and assess what the majority of the council members wanted to see implemented. Gleason said he was hopeful that the voluntary registration and database would address the concerns of landlords who said they were unaware of problems before citations were issued. But acknowledging that not everyone affected by the court is a landlord, Gleason also said he did not think a notification of 4 business days was unreasonable. I think what's lost here, or isn't mentioned, is this is likely not an offense that occurred. The inspector catches it on the very day that it occurs, or the very day that weeds are longer than what they should be, and they're Johnny on the spot, and they issue that citation, or they issue that courtesy notification, he said. I'm trying to strike that balance. I am sympathetic to the adjoining property owners and the community, and am trying to do the right and reasonable thing for the landlords. We'll turn now to another article about City of Decatur news. This one is headlined, YMCA Donates Buses to Further Fire Department Training. And this was written by Huey Freeman. The Decatur Fire Department has a tradition of training for any potential emergency. So when the board president of the Decatur Family YMCA offered to donate school buses to firefighters, they saw it as a unique opportunity. We do extrication training twice a year, Fire Chief Jeff Abbott said, adding the bus exercise is a first for the department. This gave us an opportunity to practice on school buses. Every year there have been a couple of school bus accidents in Decatur, but they've not been that serious. It's a good opportunity to train on them before something serious happens. We jumped at the chance. In addition to 2 well-used buses donated by the Y, Available Auto Parts, 2670 North Woodford Street, kicked in another bus that it had in stock. Abbott said the auto parts business has been very generous over the years, donating its vehicles for extrication training and positioning them any way the firefighters designated for various scenarios. Because of the generosity of the Y and the business, 33 firefighters were able to work on buses of varying lengths and capacities, ranging from a short bus that carries 25 passengers to a full-length bus carrying up to 71 students. Each of the three training days last week included a scenario in which a smaller vehicle was placed underneath a bus. In each case, the objective was to free someone inside the vehicle under the bus, said Deputy Fire Chief Rich Pruitt. That was a scenario where they got to apply all their skills. One of the main purposes was to learn to test the extrication tools on a larger vehicle carrying multiple passengers. The tools include saws, cutters, spreaders, and rams, a heavy-duty kind of jack. They are driven by a power head, a hydraulic pump operating at about 9,600 pounds per square inch of pressure. The firefighters made some discoveries, such as that using cutting tools to snip off the seat supports left potentially dangerous stumps. So they shifted to the spreaders, positioned them beneath the seats, and snapped the bolts off that were holding the seats in place. Lieutenant Doug Neff demonstrated that the powerful cutters can make quick work of components that were built for strength and durability. A cutter sliced through the frame of a large back window in seconds. Cutters can cut through anything, including hardened steel, Neff said. A ram, which is used to lift the dashboard and steering wheel off drivers of conventional vehicles, was used to lift the roof of a large bus. That enabled firefighters to climb into the bus to rescue the victims during the exercise, Neff said. Two of the department's companies have primary responsibility for extrications, Captain Tony Vespa said, while a third engine company has a smaller extrication unit. When there is an accident with known injuries, dispatchers send three companies and a battalion chief, Vespa said. If it's on the interstate, we might have a helicopter sent. The Illinois State Police get involved, and we try to shut down at least one lane. If there are a lot of injuries, we would shut down both lanes in one direction. In an accident, the goal is to get the patient away from the vehicle as soon as possible, hopefully within 15 minutes. That's not always possible, Vespa said. Extrication from conventional vehicles involves taking the car away from the patient. In most crashes involving school buses, the buses are struck in the rear end, Vespa said. He said the firefighters appreciate receiving the donated buses. It's hard to get buses to work on, he said, adding it is a different kind of challenge, especially because of the massive structure of a bus. These guys enjoy doing this. Melissa Watson, who concluded her term as the WISE board president on Sunday, said she heard from the CEO about 6 weeks ago that new buses were needed because two of the used ones were suited for the junkyards. From prior conversations with her husband, Decatur Fire Chief Captain Wade Watson, she realized the buses could be of possible use to firefighters. My husband talked in the past about training on cars, but I never heard him talking about a bus, said Melissa Watson, who has served as a leader of several nonprofit organizations. It was an honor to create a collaboration between the fire department and the Y. It was a great opportunity to make that happen. Jim Devereaux, owner of Available Auto Parts, said the ball got rolling on the idea of extrication training at his yard about 10 years ago when Vespa and other firefighters asked if they could test new tools at his yard. They came up with the idea to use a couple of cars, Devereaux said. We created an auto accident using real cars. Devereaux said credit should also be given to Ligari's Truck Repair for donating towing services to move buses during the exercises. Extrication training is something appreciated by Devereaux, who routinely sees the results of numerous accidents. We would rather they practice here before they cut us out of a car, he said. There is a very interesting photograph accompanying this article featuring four firefighters in complete gear. And the caption says, Decatur firefighter Tina German Roberts finishes cutting an opening in the side of a bus as firefighters Steve Mabry and Scott Lang observe during extrication training at Available Auto Parts. You can see that she's using some very heavy equipment piece there, and the entire side of the middle section of the bus is open to the outdoors, and you can see interior seats open to the outdoors as well. Our next headline reads, Decatur Public Library lures kids with summer reading program. And this was written by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Elizabeth Wood has been known to read a whole chapter book in a day. I love reading, she said, holding five books as she waited for her mother, Christy, to finish signing up her and her brother in the Decatur Public Library's summer reading program on Monday. Elizabeth is 8, and her favorite books are mysteries. She likes the A to Z Mysteries series, and her father's love of Encyclopedia Brown books as a boy inspired her to start reading those, too. The library's summer reading program, Read to the Rhythm, kicked off Monday, and though Decatur's public schools won't dismiss for the year until Wednesday, children's librarian Katie Gross had to choose a starting date before she knew the exact date of the end of the school year. Parochial schools and the county schools are already out for the year. It's awesome, Christy Wood said. They're encouraging little kids to read. Children set their own reading goals with weekly prizes for meeting those goals, and even children too young to read to themselves can be included. An adult can read to them. That's the way to grow readers, by reading to children, Gross said. Educators often talk about summer brain drain and the necessity of weeks of review in the fall because kids have forgotten so much during the break. One way to combat it is reading. Kids choose their own books, and librarians are on hand to help if they don't quite know what they want or they know but can't find it. Reporting on their weekly reading is also a chance to meet the librarians. It's a way to get the kids to talk to the librarian, Gross said, smiling. They don't always want to do that. Decatur Schools offers a recommended reading list for summer, and a display of those books is in the center of the children's section. Rewards for meeting goals include a ticket to the new Read-iculous summer show, 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, June 30th, and 10:30 a.m. Friday, July 10th. Getting your name entered into a drawing for a t-shirt, treat coupons, a book bag, bookmarks, a Papa Murphy's pizza coupon, a ticket to the Sparky and Rhonda Rucker concert, 2 and 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, July 28th, and 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 29th. The Ruckers perform music and storytelling using bottleneck blues guitar, harmonica, banjo, piano, spoons, and bones. The end of the season reward is a free book, courtesy of the Friends of the Library. A photograph accompanying this article shows Lexi Wren, age 6, who is showing her excitement by grinning ear to ear. She's starting the summer reading program and signing herself up for it, and she truly does look excited. We turn now to news about crime and the courts. This article is headlined, Decatur Man Accused of Choking and Detaining Woman. The article was written by Huey Freeman. Beau J. Cunningham, a 39-year-old Decatur man with an extensive criminal history, is being held in jail on $50,000 bond after he allegedly choked a woman, held her against her will, and threatened to kill her. The victim told police that she and Cunningham were involved in an argument the afternoon of May 20th in a residence on the city's north side. During the argument, Beau got on top of her and smothered her using his hand across her face and mouth, said an affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Cody Rose. Cunningham then placed his hand on her throat, applied pressure, and was stating he would kill her, Rose wrote in his statement. When a witness entered the room and told Cunningham to get off of the victim, he then charged at that witness. The witness backed away as Cunningham threatened to kill him and tried to engage him in a fight, the victim told police. Officers observed red marks on the victim's arm and her face was reddened, the affidavit said. Cunningham was arrested May 26th and booked into the Macon County Jail. On Monday, he was arraigned in circuit court on felony counts of aggravated domestic battery and unlawful restraint, in addition to one misdemeanor count of domestic battery. He is due in court for his preliminary hearing June 10th. Cunningham, who has 7 prior criminal convictions and has served 2 terms in the Illinois Department of Corrections, was convicted of aggravated battery with great bodily harm in November 2007. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the June 2nd issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.